Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, January 22nd, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Idaho Senator Ben Adams of Nampa proposes constitutional amendment to ban the sale of certain public lands. Idaho Supreme Court Chief Justice says threats against judges have increased sharply. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Reports. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Democratic State Senator Marcus Richelli of Spokane has proposed a bill that would expand a 2022 law that gives incentives and tax deferrals to those who sell parking lots to developers who want to build affordable housing. The law applies to cities with populations between 135,000 and 250,000. Richelli's bill would increase that maximum to $275,000. Richelli's bill also would lower the number of units that would have to be affordable housing in order to get a state sales tax and use tax break. Currently, 50% of the units would have to be affordable. The proposal lowers that to 20%, but only if they are located in an area with great housing need, as determined by the local municipality. According to the Spokesman Review, Richelli said, "We took a lot of feedback and we think we've put forward something that can really be another great tool in the toolbox for developing housing in the community, which is sorely needed." In his annual speech to a joint session of the Idaho legislature yesterday, Idaho Supreme Court Chief Justice G. Richard Bevin said there has been a sharp increase in violent threats to judges. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, Bevin told lawmakers, "Threats directed at Idaho judges and courts have increased significantly in recent years, and while most never materialize, those that do require precautions that can disrupt court operations and delay the delivery of justice." Bevin mentioned the December 26th shooting at the Shoshone County Sheriff's Office near the county courthouse and other government buildings in Wallace. Bevin said it's only been a month since a man approached the Shoshone County Sheriff's Office and began firing his weapon. The nearby courthouse was closed for a state holiday, but had it been open, it is unsettling to imagine county clerks, court staff, the public, or judges finding themselves in harm's way. All of us who serve in public office understand that the risk is not theoretical. He also mentioned a judge who sentenced a defendant to probation after prosecutors originally charged the person with lewd conduct with a minor child under 16 years old. After announcement of the plea agreement, the judge was subject to numerous threats from around the nation, including calls to hunt the judge down. Bevin told lawmakers, "Legislators, judges, and executive officials alike have been reminded tragically that public service can make one a target, especially given the importance of conducting public business in a space open to the public, and that reality places sustained pressure on courtroom security." Republican State Senator Ben Adams of Nampa has proposed a constitutional amendment to bar Idaho from selling any land the state might acquire from the federal government in the future. Adams presented his amendment in the Senate State Affairs Committee yesterday. He led a public outreach campaign to assess residents' views on the issue. Adams said he wants to ensure public lands continue to belong to Idahoans. Adams said, "I wanted feedback. I wanted a lot of feedback because it dealt with and deals with a very personal matter for every Idahoan, and that is our public land here in Idaho." Adams' draft constitutional amendment says public land purchases after the amendment passes are to be held in trust for the state. That would include federal lands acquired through exchange, federal grants, or purchased using funds from the sale of public lands. The proposal says land held in trust cannot be sold and can only be exchanged for other lands with a two-thirds supermajority approval by Idaho lawmakers. Senator Adams' proposed constitutional amendment would not make any changes to the 2.5 million acres of state endowment lands, which the state can sell. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has offered a $10,000 reward for information about the killing of a wolf someone found dead in southern Oregon in October. The radio-collared wolf, known as OR-186, was on public land in Lake County, north of Yamsay Mountain, roughly 10 miles from the Jackson Creek campground north of Klamath Falls and 30 miles east of Crater Lake. It was found October 7th. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service characterized the wolf's death as an illegal killing and has offered payments for information to people who lead to civil or criminal penalties against the perpetrators. Southern Oregon ranchers say they believe the wolf population has recovered from endangered levels and wolves pose a threat to their herds. Republican U.S. Representative Cliff Bentz of Oregon's 2nd Congressional District has been pushing for gray wolves to be delisted from the endangered species list. According to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife annual report, the wolf population in the state has exceeded 200. Hunters killed 22 wolves in Oregon in 2024. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report.
The highest risk factor for maternal mortality in Washington state is to be American Indian or Alaska Native. That's according to a new report from the Washington Department of Health's Maternal Mortality Review Panel. The panel found the risk of dying from pregnancy-related causes is more than 7 times higher for Native Americans than non-Hispanic white Washingtonians. Cindy Gamble has represented the American Indian Health Commission on the panel for about 8 years. She says the report reflects the continued harm of colonization and a loss of traditional forms of care and community.
From 6 weeks to a year, afterbirth is where almost half of the deaths occur. So that speaks to the support that young families need. They need a lot more support than they are receiving.
The report issues recommendations for the legislature, healthcare systems, and providers focused on improving care quality and access. It also calls for strengthening community support and ensuring equitable, culturally responsive care. Gamble says she was shocked to learn that over 80% of the maternal deaths in the state were preventable, with behavioral health issues like overdose, suicide, and homicide accounting for nearly half. Despite the grim outlook, however, she remains optimistic, noting that the state health department has intentionally recruited people from impacted communities to be on the panel.
Tribes are very adamant about moving forward and coming up with tribal-led programs and solutions so that we can start to erase these disparities for our people.
Gamble adds that along with state and tribal policy, community-level work is also essential. She notes that tribes and grassroots birth justice groups across the state are bringing back traditional birthing and parenting practices to heal from the impacts of colonization, as well as ongoing racism and discrimination. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Princeton residents James and Janine Schraufnagel entered not guilty pleas to charges of animal cruelty this week. Latah County Sheriff's deputies say they found a dozen abused dogs at the couple's home in Princeton. Two of the dogs were found dead, one inside the home and another outside in a kennel. According to the Daily News, Latah County Magistrate Judge Sunil Ramalingam said the Schraufnagels face up to 6 months in jail and $1,000 in fines for each misdemeanor count. Ramalingam said the penalties could go up if prosecutors file future charges. A crowd of people, including members of the Idaho Animal Rescue Network, attended the Schraufnagels hearing yesterday after the Lewiston-based Idaho Animal Rescue Network notified police about the starving dogs. James Schraufnagel's mother, Beth Davis, who is the owner of the McKinneyville Road property where deputies found the dogs, offered to surrender the dogs to Idaho Animal Rescue Network representatives. Prosecutors charged Davis with animal cruelty, too. Davis's arraignment is scheduled for Monday. According to court records, starvation is the likely cause of the two dogs' deaths. Many of the dogs were chained in kennels and were standing in their own feces. Authorities removed a total of 10 dogs from the property. A third dog, a red-bone coonhound, died at the Viking Veterinary Hospital in Moscow due to severe pneumonia, and a second coonhound is in foster care and is improving. Humane Society of the Police Workers are caring for the remaining dogs in Moscow. Humane Society Director Sarah Beeler said, two of the 10 dogs are already in foster care and the other 8 are doing well and gaining weight. Beeler thanked the community's response with food donations and other supplies to the Humane Society. Latah County Deputy Prosecutor Michael Terry said, despite the seriousness of the charges, they remain misdemeanors and do not rise to the felony level. A 33-year-old Colton resident died Sunday in a car crash on Wawawi Pullman Road. The Whitman County Sheriff's Office said emergency responders pronounced Alex Papendick dead at the scene of the single vehicle accident. According to the Daily News, the Sheriff's Department said the accident happened around 11 a.m. near milepost 6 on the Wawawi Pullman Road, southwest of Pullman. Investigators say the vehicle was traveling south when it left the road and rolled several times, coming to rest on the roadway. The Sheriff's Office is investigating the incident.
Montana's main utility has released a draft plan to supply energy to its customers for the next 20 years, and environmental advocates have concerns. Northwestern Energy submits an Integrated Resource Plan, or IRP, to the Public Service Commission every 3 years. Nick Fitzmaurice is with the Montana Environmental Information Center, and he's also part of the stakeholder group for the 2026 IRP. He says the 332-page draft makes it clear Northwestern Energy won't rely on renewable energy sources like wind and solar power.
A lot of the reasons lie in how the modeling is structured and not necessarily because those resources can't be cost-effective parts of their energy system to meet reliability requirements. And really, I think that those resources are really cost-effective and available.
Northwestern Energy says the IRP is a long-term study and not a final plan for decisions or construction. The utility will hold 4 public meetings on the draft plan starting next Tuesday in Great Falls, followed by Missoula, Helena, and Bozeman in the following weeks. Ahead of the community meetings, the Montana Environmental Information Center is hosting a webinar about the plan today at 4:30 p.m. Fitzmaurice says the webinar will dive into the document and give it some context.
We want folks to have an idea of what's going on in the IRP, why the results might not be the whole picture, and give folks a better idea of if they want to show up and give public comment for Northwestern's meetings.
Details on the webinar and how to join it are on the organization's website at meic.org. If you can't attend one of Northwestern Energy's public meetings, you can submit comments online. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tie-dye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Dunga Dunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Dunga Dunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at hungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
Satellite measurements show Montana's Colstrip power plant emits the 4th largest carbon dioxide plume in the U.S. A tool called Carbon Mapper displays measurements from multiple satellite and aircraft measurements. They show the plant emits more than 1.5 million pounds of CO2 pollution per hour. That's the equivalent of burning 4 rail cars of coal. Riley Duran is Carbon Mapper's founder and CEO, a nonprofit that measures climate warming greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and methane.
Specifically, what we do is pinpoint the locations and the emission rates of emissions from individual pieces of equipment.
Carbon Mapper's online data portal includes CO2 and methane plumes, visualizing how far they extend beyond the facilities generating them. Duren says all the information on the website is free to the public. It's one of a number of private companies, nonprofits, and governments monitoring polluters as the Trump administration proposes ending emissions reporting requirements. Duren says methane, another heat-trapping gas, is a huge opportunity for climate action. He says it's 80 times more potent than CO2 in terms of warming potential over 20 years. He adds small methane reductions can have a big impact on reducing climate change.
There are many things we can do at both the personal level, the local level, and state level to reduce emissions from methane, whether it's from oil and gas production and use or waste management, for example, how we treat landfills.
Duren says Carbon Mapper plans to launch more satellites and to encourage both decision makers and the public to translate the data into action.
If you can pinpoint the outsized emitters and guide focused attention on them, you can have a major impact on emission reductions quickly.
Northwestern Energy, Montana's largest utility, has a majority share of the Colstrip power plant as of January 1st, more than tripling its coal generating capacity. This story was produced with original reporting by Karen Kirk with Yale Climate Connections. I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
The Trump administration has blocked the implementation of tougher wastewater treatment standards for coal-fired power plants in Wyoming and across the nation, a move that saves operators money. But critics warn that these and other efforts to boost the coal industry are bad for business and public health. Tom Smar with Earth Justice says the Environmental Protection Agency's new standards require operators to invest in technologies that reduce the release of toxins like arsenic, lead, and mercury into waterways.
The health benefits of fewer incidences of cancer, cardiovascular disease, less exposure to children to harmful levels of lead, that those benefits far exceed the cost to the industry.
The new standards would cut more than 600 million pounds of wastewater pollution each year, according to the EPA's own projections. The agency claims delaying those standards is necessary to address electric grid reliability, rising demand, and affordability. The EPA's actions are in sync with campaign promises made by President Donald Trump to revive the coal industry, remove environmental protections, and abandon efforts to transition to clean energy sources like wind and solar. The EPA also announced that it will no longer calculate the monetary benefits of improving health and saving lives when considering air and water protections. That move violates a U.S. Supreme Court instruction that the government cannot stack the deck to benefit polluters, according to consumer advocacy group Public Citizen. Smar says keeping coal-fired power plants online will not lead to lower energy bills.
Unfortunately, this administration has chosen to give this handout to industry instead of taking a forward-looking approach to where can we get our power in cleaner and less expensive ways.
Protecting the nation's air and water is critical for a functioning economy, according to a Coalition for Sensible Safeguards report, in part because healthy workers are more productive. Air pollution reductions under the Clean Air Act have led to higher workforce participation and increased lifetime earnings. According to EPA data, these protections prevent more than 100,000 deaths and millions of lost workdays each year. The agency also found that the economic benefits exceed the costs by a factor of 30. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service.
Experts say the beginning of the year is a great time to break the silence around one of life's most important yet most avoided conversations, our wishes at the end of our lives. Research finds only one of three people have completed related paperwork like advance directives. Megan Williams is with Compassion and Choices, a national nonprofit focused on end-of-life healthcare planning and options. She says while the Pacific Northwest is ahead of the curve in providing options during this time, the conversations can still be uncomfortable. So a lot of people wait to fill out the paperwork until there's a crisis.
Our goal is to encourage everyone over the age of 18 to start having these conversations because you could unfortunately be in an accident or end up with an illness that puts you on a ventilator or has you in a place where you can't make your own choices.
Williams says Compassion and Choices has an online guide that walks people through filling out an advance directive. She says it also includes a dementia toolkit and other documents that spell out end-of-life choices for Oregon or any state. Williams explains while completing the paperwork is the goal, the conversations it sparks are also important. important. She says talking openly with loved ones about your wishes helps them ask questions and support you fully, especially if you can't speak for yourself.
Talking about death will not make it come faster, but it will give you a softer place to land when your time is coming. I want my loved ones to be with me and present, not waffling over what decision to make.
Williams adds the start of a new year, a new season, or some other transition moment like returning from time away from work and feeling refreshed are great times to begin talking about end-of-life options. She also encourages people to treat advance directives as living documents that they can revisit often as health or other life changes happen. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly cloudy tonight, low 22, mostly clear Friday through Sunday, with highs 30 Friday and Saturday, and 33 on Sunday, lows 18. Current temperature is 28 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints is up next, followed by Appearing Locally, where we feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow Pullman area for a half hour every Thursday night at 8 o'clock First Wave, and at 9 o'clock Connecting the Notes. Jam band music with The Ride, 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. Stay tuned.